tell you, my wife actually worked at two of those newspapers at various times in her career. And it's just, it's a real sad thing to happen. It's sad for the people in the communities. It's sad for democracy as a whole. And it's sad because a lot of these people, you know, they're journalists. Yes, they're mainstream media, but they're working folks. And
And I draw a real distinction there, John. I truly do. There's a big difference between between George Will or David Brooks and the guy who covers the police blotter in Huntsville.
Yeah.
I mean, you can drive a truck through the gap between them, or a fleet of them. I mean, the community newspapers, you're absolutely right. Community newspapers are the glue that holds the town together. Or some substantial part of that glue.
Yeah, well, they're a big part of it because, you know, they do work that, you know, I mean, of course, every paper does bad work and whatever, but they keep people informed about what their government officials are doing, where their tax dollars are going, and they hold folks, you know, who spend that money accountable. And that's kind of maybe a rosy, you know, sort of picture of it, but it happens. And it would be a very, very bad thing, not just for, you know, working people, but for our democracy as a whole, if daily newspapers disappeared. And that seems to be where the industry is going. And again, trust me on this. I'm on the inside. That's the direction, and it's a real shame, and this is just a very bad sign for us as a society, I think.
Right, because it creates more space, I think, John, for the ideological partisans to control the public discourse.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened in radio. You know, you probably well remember when Clear Channel bought up practically every radio station in the United States, it seemed, after Bill Clinton signed the 1996 Telecommunications Act into law. There was a train car derailment or some such in one of the Dakotas, I think. I'm probably getting this about 99% wrong. But the gist of it was there was a need to inform the public that they needed to take certain precautions. Well, they naturally, the first responders called the radio station.
Yeah.
Well, there was no radio station at the radio station, John. The radio station was simply
automated thing.
Yeah, it was just all automation, and it was just running a satellite feed onto the local airwaves from wherever the central processor was for Clear Channel. And that put at that point in time, it put that entire community in grave danger. And that still obtains in a lot of cities today. And if that goes away and the local paper goes away, what's left?
Well, not a whole lot, I would argue. And I'm increasingly convinced that media is one of those things, and I know Molloy talks about some things that he says are just too important to be left up to profit, you know, transportation and defense and some other things. I'm probably getting this wrong, but I mean, I've heard him say this before.
Yeah, water, really clean air.
Utilities, right, exactly. I mean, that things that, you know, public transportation, things that can't make a profit and aren't really designed to, but we've decided need to be profitized. And I'm just convinced more and more that media is one of them. I mean, for God's sake, it's in the Constitution. Why can we let, you know, the press fail as a people? Aren't we failing ourselves in the document that finds us as a people and created us as a people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, everyone says that the Internet threw this all into chaos. I say no. Because there were problems in print media long before the Internet came along. Because there was the constant, you know, the constant dynamic challenge between advertising revenue versus speaking truth to power. And again, the same thing obtains in broadcast, where the salespeople say, you can't report that. I mean, they're an advertiser. What are you thinking? At some point that runs head on. Headlong into each other, and the way it's supposed to work is that the need to inform the public is supposed to trump the need to make a buck.
Right.
But we've run in allowing the bean counters Sorry, no offense intended. But in allowing the money department to rule the journalism department, I think that more than the internet is where the problems came from.
Yeah, I mean, they're a very large media company in this country, I can tell you, is on record as saying that in 10 years there will no longer be a print paper. That's their goal, and they're willing to sacrifice revenues for it in the short term. Because the end result is to be online only, if at all, and to get rid of all the journalists who are making, you know, a living that you can support a family on, basically. And get rid of them and hire them back at, you know, half of the pay, or kids right out of college who sort of don't really know anything else, you know.
Right.
And that's the goal. And it's troubling.
And you know, you see little signposts of the problems that are out there. For instance, that newspaper in Central Louisiana that last week or week before ran the full page ad stating that Obama wanted to murder Catholics and other Christians.
Yep.
And their editorial department said, you know, we vet everything that runs here, and we felt like that was fair.
I know that company well, I will say.
Do you really? Yep.
I do.
And
we should leave it at that.
Okay, but I mean, how is that? How does that pass? I mean, how does that pass a vetting process? I mean, is there any factual evidence whatsoever, John, to suggest that Barack Obama wants to just go out and start blowing away priests?
Well, if there was a vetting process, the vetting process goes to, you know, what is this going to make us? You know, I mean, that's really my opinion on that. I'm doubtful that there was a vetting process, but yeah.
The vetting, well, no, I think there was a vetting process, John. You know what the vetting process consisted of?
Hmm.
Hey, Mel, the check clear from them people that said Obama's going to kill the Catholic priests? Sure did. Run it.
Bingo. Exactly. Yeah, and that's the real problem, and that's why I'm saying that I think that we need to come to realization that the profit motive doesn't really have a place in this. And you know where else it doesn't have a place? And I'll segue, you know, quickly, because I want to let some other folks in. It doesn't have a place in history and heritage.
Hear, hear.
Right, and where I'm going with that, again, I talked to you about this. And folks, I'd really be curious to hear from the Canadian listeners. The issue is going on in Parks Canada, which is like the National Park Service in the U.S. You know, they run the country's historic sites, and they employ archaeologists and historians and public interpreters, and they staff the, you know, the natural and historical resource sites. Well, they have decided, as far as I know it's for sure, that they're going to slash the budgets for the personnel who work for those sites, like 50% or more. To put it this way, the last archaeological field school that I directed would have had more people, more archaeologists working on it than will be working in all of Canada outside of Ontario.
Dear God.
And this, yeah, that gives it some perspective, I think. And I had maybe 12 students. There's going to be
and you know, when we first started discussing this, John, it kind of blew my mind because is there any evidence out there? Well, we're talking about the Harper government, right?
Yeah.
Do they have any data to suggest that Canada has stopped going to its national parks?
As far as I know, they don't, and from what little I know of Canadians, I highly, highly doubt that. They seem like a very, intelligent, very folks who are appreciative of their heritage and their place in the world, I would think.
And there's a lot of heritage and places in Canada, you know, from, literally from east to west. I mean, the places that were Vinland, all the way to the, you know, to the native cultures of the West Coast, and so all the national funding for those places within the public trust just going to disappear.
Is going to disappear. The plan right now is to have one Parks Canada archaeologist whose duty covers the entire Canadian Arctic, which is a rather large place.
Yeah.
And a rather important place for a very large amount of heritage and native history and prehistory, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the thing. This is the
and let's remember that there is not. It's not just a tourism There's a tourism and a teaching component, but there is also a preservation component, John.
Yes.
There are plenty of pot hunters left in the world. There are plenty of people who will dig stuff out of the earth and brush the dirt off of it maybe, and take it and sell it to some collector, to sell it to somebody for more money. It's a huge business, is it not?
It is an enormous business, and wow, the profit really does roll downhill, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and of course that's a business model that the right wing, whether it be American or Canadian, embraces.
Well, of course it does. It's the same kind of thinking that says we don't need, you know, government workers, meaning teachers and firemen and cops and et cetera, et cetera. You know, we don't need to preserve our heritage. We don't need to open it up for, for protection or for tourism and economic development. And that's the thing is that, you know, NPS sites and Parks Canada sites generate a decent amount of money. I mean, people go and visit them and they spend their money. And it's a money making sort of thing, and they're short sighted, or it's not enough, or they want to clear the way for development. I really honestly
see. I think it's that third one, John. The beautiful places on Earth can only be appreciated by the beautiful people, and the beautiful people are defined by the amount of beautiful money they possess.
There you go. Yeah, the 1% is the beautiful side, and it's just troubling. And then I see a connection between those two things, and maybe it's not there, but just two really, really troubling stories, and I kind of wanted just to get them out there because I feel like they haven't gotten a whole lot of play. So
I'm very glad you did, and we will look for input from the Canadian side of the audience. But if there's any, just based on what I've seen coming from some of our Canadian listeners, there is deep concern about just what it is that the Harper government has in store for Canada, because the Harper government is not that ideologically different from the United States right wing. Right wing is right wing is right wing.
He's always seemed like Bush North to me. I'm seeing this from a distance, so I don't know, but yeah.
No, I don't think your assessment is far off the mark, John.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you letting me vent a little bit, and I'm looking forward to hearing your other callers, so I'll get out of your way here.
John, you have yourself a good evening, and enjoy your Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt, and thanks for the outreach that you've made to Representative Hinchey and his likely eventual successor. And I'll try to get a copy of the bill into his hands. The bill is in Representative Hinchey's email, so the Dear Colleague letter went out a week ago, and it went out via email, so every member has the bill in their possession.
Oh, great, good to hear. Well, like I said, the people I talked to were receptive, so that's a good sign. Maybe the word hasn't trickled down to the phone callers yet. So.
Cool, excellent. Well, thank you again, very, very much.
My pleasure, Bob. Take care of yourself and your family.
All right. Will do. You too. Take care, John. Bye. From New York, that's our buddy, Dr. John. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Someday I'll be able to afford a producer. Let's see. Contribution update. We are $25 away. We are $25 away from matching Darlene's challenge. She has $100 to kick into the kitty and would like to see that matched by another kindred hundred. So there we go. We are $25 away, and thank you for all of you who have kindly contributed. This coming from Ron and Raleigh, based on Edward's remarks about and my remarks about the Atlantic coast of the southern Atlantic coast. That same tax scam was used on Hilton Head in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, as well as all along the coastal barrier islands in North Carolina. It's what the 1% does when the 1% wants what the 99% have. Is this the part of the program where I remind us they want it all? Not most of it, Not a big chunk of it. They want it all. And if we could be returned somehow, if the right wing could return us somehow to a sort of tenant serfdom, don't kid yourself. They would gladly do it. And make some sort of economic sharecroppers of all of us that they haven't already managed to do. Andy, writing in from California, he says, regarding your conversation with Dr. John, newspapers have always held a special place in our democracy, giving them special distribution rights, discounts, through that big government postal service. Thank Bubba, ex-President Bill Clinton, for helping to further destroy mass media in this country, going from about 90 outlets across the country, controlling about 90% of the media landscape, to six major conglomerates not long after the 1996 Telecommunications Act passed. Don't forget, Clear Channel, one of the biggest radio outfits, is owned by, oh, thank you for the reminder, Andy, Bain Capital, which laid off roughly 3,000 employees to create that single voice recording, one message, across the country to propel the propaganda, or, as Dim Leader used to say, to catapult the propaganda. Thank you very, very kindly. We have met Darlene's challenge. That gets us off to a good start, a very good start for this week. It is about 23 minutes before the hour, and I didn't do it because it was Moran Monday. I didn't do it, but I wanted to take a minute because I said I would every night and urge you, if you have not yet, to please call your member of Congress. Their office has in their possession a Dear Colleague letter signed by Representatives Dennis Kucinich and Louise Slaughter asking them to sign on to the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It will take very little of your time for you to do this. Call your congressperson's office. Ask them to sign on this week as an original co-sponsor of the AIC Act. It is the most important piece of legislation affecting Appalachia now. There's no other piece of legislation that will go through the Congress that will have a greater impact on Central Appalachia than the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. We must know what it is and why it is that a woman who is carrying a child and lives in a mountaintop removal community, we must know what it is and why it is that she has 181% greater chance of giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than a mother who doesn't live in a mountaintop removal community and smokes like a chimney. We must know that answer, and this is the means by which we find it out. We had a great brainstorming session with David from Maine this past Friday about all of this. You can make a difference. The right wing talks about how it loves the little unborn babies. With a single phone call and some advocacy to your member of Congress, you can exhibit more concern for the unborn in Appalachia than all the right-wingers, all the Tony Perkinses, all the James Dobsons, all the Jerry Falwells, all the Pat Robertsons, all the Creflo Dollars thrown together with one phone call. One phone call. Now, I will ask you, when you make that contact, do as others have done. Please shoot me a note and tell me who you contacted so I, in turn, can turn around and tell the rest of the AIC team who contact has been made with, because it's very effective to make a coordinated effort where we get to walk in and say, we know you're hearing from your constituents who want you to sign on to this bill. Please do so. That makes it doubly effective. Can you do it? You can learn about the AIC Act at stoptheaic.org, and you can learn about it at crmw.net. Also at crmw.net, which is the home of Coal River Mountain Watch, you can get your very own, as Dr. John mentioned, you can get your very own Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt, the coolest t-shirt going. They're not very expensive at all, and it goes to help support the work of Coal River Mountain Watch, which does, in fact, include the AIC campaign. And anywhere you go, it will be a conversation starter. God knows it's a conversation starter around here. Sadly, because of the nature of things around here, that conversation usually begins with, "You son of a bitch! Tree hugger!" But others say, "I agree. I agree." And since you've listened to this program, you are probably more and better informed about mountaintop removal than just about anybody else in this country. And you, therefore, are in a prime position to do some missionary work and some educating when you wear your Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt and people ask you what it's all about. I know our buddy Jug of Punch has one, too. And it is a conversation starter. Mentioning mountaintop removal reminds me there was some breaking news today, just before showtime. I got it from our friends over at the Rainforest Action Network. They were the ones who made it possible for me to go and speak to Bank of America down in Charlotte in early May in that room full of locked and loaded firearms borne by off-duty police officers. It was a little nervous time. But it turns out that Bank of America got the message. You might recall that part of what I said to them was that they had made me sad because Brian Moynihan, I think that was his name, CEO, said he didn't envision Bank of America's policy on coal changing. Well, apparently he wasn't lying. It turns out that today, Bank of America, in an act of really cynical greenwashing, made a big announcement. Today's announcement builds on Bank of America's legacy of leadership in the environmental arena. Well, it kind of depends on how you define leadership, I reckon. What they said is that they will fund, to the tune of billions of dollars, renewable energy. That part is good. But to the extent that what they didn't do is what matters. They didn't change their policy on coal. As Rand notes, plain and simple, increasing support for renewable energy and not decreasing funding for coal will not do what's needed to reduce emissions or protect the climate. Rand goes on to note, Bank of America's commitment is to renewable energy is a step in the right direction for the climate. However, the bank is simultaneously taking two steps back by continuing to underwrite the coal industry. The bottom line is we cannot reduce the emissions necessary to stem climate change with renewable energy funding alone. We must also curb our use of coal, and Bank of America's new environmental commitment makes no move to do that. Bank of America boasts about increasing its commitments to renewable energy, but omits reporting its steadily increasing financing for coal, the number one source of U.S. climate pollution. Between 2010 and 2011, Bank of America provided more than $6.4 billion in underwriting for U.S. coal, and that includes the companies that are blowing up Appalachia and shipping it overseas. They produced a video. I thought I'd go ahead and share the audio with you. These are some of the folks who traveled to Charlotte for the shareholder meeting. It's a pretty strong message, and I really appreciate them doing this. RAND is a very good organization.
I'm Beth Henry.
My name is Noel Chandler.
I'm Adam Hall.
My name is Matt.
I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hi, I'm Kristen Owen, and I'm from the heart of King Coal, Laramie, Wyoming.
I'm from Glendaniel, West Virginia.
I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'm from Missoula, Montana.
I'm here from Bellingham, Washington.
I'm from Fayette County, West Virginia. I'm a ninth generation Appalachian.
I've lost about 80% of my family due to coal-connected diseases.
Massive amounts of birth defects.
What we have now is nothing compared to what is actually being proposed.
We have a virtual asthma epidemic here.
Two largest coal export facilities in North America. One of those is right in my waterway.
Cancers, heart disease, pulmonary disease, genitourinary disease.
Lead, mercury, uranium, cadmium.
Increasing lung cancer here, even though smoking is down.
Breathing this in, I know it can't be good for me.
I'm here to tell Bank of America.
I'm here to tell Bank of America.
Tell Bank of America.
Tell Bank of America.
And I'm here to tell Bank of America
that what they're doing with coal finance is not okay.
That the financing of coal must stop.
Stop funding mountaintop removal coal.
And poisoning communities all throughout America.
Time for us to put an end to profits over people.
We want Bank of America to stop funding dirty coal and instead fund the future, clean, renewable energy.
Pretty clear message, huh? Yeah, I was in there. But that's not why I played it. I would have played it if I wasn't. What's inspiring is to hear Bellingham, Washington, Wyoming, Montana, North Carolina, West Virginia. It's inspiring to hear that because it lets you know that this truly has become a nationwide effort. And when you meet people like I met in Germany, from Indonesia, from India, my friends Itan and Ashish, my new friends, then you know that it has gone global. And there is an unwillingness to remain silent any longer. For the love of God, these profiteering monsters are poisoning us. They're killing us. It is impossible to be of good conscience and remain silent under those circumstances. My new friends in Germany, Peter and his son Max, live in a town whose viewshed, for want of a better term, will soon be a matter of looking out from a village that is 1,000 years old, that sits on ground that the legions marched over 2,000 years ago. The view from their home will be of a vast, open, 1,400-foot-deep cancer of a strip mine in west-central Germany. One of the countries that is doing more moving toward renewables and sustainables than any country on the planet. And yet their 1% and a corporation called RWE remains hell-bent on burning the last of the filthiest energy source that their country has remaining. 1,400 feet into the earth to scrape out a layer of something that isn't even coal, lignite. It's just one step above peat moss and carboniferous mud. It's 33% water, lignite. And that will be the view of my German friends when they go for a walk in that beautiful, beautiful little village. Their village will at least still be there. Five others will be gone. It's already begun. The operations of Coal India in India, in the subcontinent, are the stuff that defines predatory corporate practices. The beautiful, tropical, lush Indonesian jungle where Etan's people come from is now a cancerous scar visible from space. And for what? For security? No. For the constant drive for more profit, more junk, more consumable crap that adds not one iota to the value of the average human life. Nothing. Nothing. So, participating by simply calling your member of Congress and asking them to sign onto the AIC Act is more than just a phone call. It's more than just a couple of minutes out of your day. It is literally a matter of putting your hand out and clasping the hand of a brother or a sister that you didn't even know you had. Of a mother in Appalachia, a father, a grandfather, of enabling walks in what is left of this magnificent temperate rainforest. That's what you're doing when you pick up the phone. That is what you are doing when you tell your member of Congress that you want them to sign on and press passage of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. And that, I think, in just about any metric, is a damned good use of a very small portion of your day. Measured against the other things that chew up and grind up the essence of our daily lives, I don't think there are many other things that would be better uses, nobler uses of your time. 4 minutes before the hour, and we will take our top of the hour break. This is the Monday, June 11th, 2012 edition of The Horn. You know the numbers, right? 877-443-2366. That's the toll-free number to call in. It also spells 877 head on. The number 4, head on. 877-4, head on. Direct dial is 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. It's all ever so easy. And just a reminder, if you want to try it out, I think that we are Skype capable here. The handle for the studio on Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, if you want to try that method. It's all fine by me. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. You have met Darlene's challenge, and for that I thank you very much. And I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Everybody knows his name. He said there's no doubt about it. It was a myth of fingerprints. I've seen them all, and man, they're all the same. When the sun gets weary and the sun goes down, ever since the watermelon, and the lights come up on the blackhead town. Somebody says, what's a better thing to do? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Out in the Indian Ocean somewhere, there's a former army post, abandoned now just like the war. And there's no doubt about it, it was the myth of fingerprints. That's what that old army post was for. Well, the sun gets bloody and the sun goes down, ever since the watermelon, and the lights come up on the blackhead town. Somebody said, what's a better thing to do? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Over the mountain, down in the valley, lives the former talk show host. Far and wide, his name was known. He said, there's no doubt. That's why we must learn to live alone.
Head on begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. Lots more conversation available in the coming hour. 8 o'clock straight up here on the East Coast. You know how to reach the program. You know, we'll get to some of these stories. We'll get some of these stories as the evening progresses. One of them, at the very least, is just too much to go into right now. It's the damn sad. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, well. Okay, we'll go to it now. You've probably... How do you tell these stories any differently than to give the particulars? And just say, well, you know what you say. Because it's all too easy.
Yeah, Jacob's Chinatown.
Yeah, it's Chinatown. Only Chinatown is America. And America is a place where school teachers get murdered over loud music by stand your ground NRA members who go out with murder in their eyes and guns in their hands. It's also a place where you go to a pool party down on what they call the plains in Alabama near Auburn. Where three young men, Ed Christian, Ladarius Phillips, and DeMario Pitts, all of them 20 years of age, get gunned down at a pool party. Six young people were shot, three were killed, three were wounded, according to the Auburn police chief. The shooter's been identified as 22-year-old Desmonte Leonard. University Heights apartment complex was the scene where the pool was. An argument erupted allegedly over a girl. A punch was thrown. A bottle was hit. A couple of people were hit over the head with a bottle. Taquarius Vines said, "We were trying to get away from the trouble and it ended up right in our face." The party went from us chilling to a massacre for no reason at all. It happened so quick, in about a second. No one died from being hit over the head with a bottle. No one died from a punch getting thrown. The death and the agony happened when the guns came out. Because here in America, we gotta have us some guns that we can take anywhere in the world, anywhere we want to go in America with our guns. So's when the government comes to take away our precious Second Amendment rights that Jesus done give us, we can defend against the government. We want to fight the government. The National Rifle Association is very good for business. It's very good for the funeral home business. Twenty years old, hanging out by the pool. And in a matter of a couple of seconds, three people are dead. Because we value our American rights to keep and bear arms. Because you never know when the government's going to come to take them. In the meantime, we can just blow away the occasional... we'll sacrifice the occasional 20-year-old. That's all right. That's the price we pay for freedom. Assholes. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's happening?
Bob?
Yeah.
I know. It's good to hear from you again. Been following your travels. That was... And actually, I have a similar view of Brussels, which is...
Well, first of all, who have I got?
I'm Keith. Keith from Astoria again.
Oh, hey, Keith.
Hey, it's been a while. The one thing about Europe is you don't see guns the way you see them in this country.
No, if that guy had had a gun, I'd probably be dead.
Yeah, it's just not, you know, there are gun control laws in Europe. Really realistic ones and sensible.
And they
laws.
Don't seem to be wanting in any freedom.
No, I mean, there's no, what? I'm just on the radio station. Okay, I have to go, Bob. Sorry, I got a problem coming up at home right now.
Oh, no worries, no worries. We'll talk to you later.
I'll give you a call later.
All right, bye now. No, they don't. No one's walking around in manacles. The thief skipped away. I will never forget the image of his back skipping away. Little bastard. They have their crime, we have ours. Our crime tends to come with pools of blood next to pools of water. Or elementary school teachers lying dead in a road because a cranky old man with a gun in his hand didn't like the music. Well, anybody want to work on that? That's about halfway to a song lyric. Cranky old man with a gun in his hand who didn't like the music. Whew. Merciful God. So this weekend it was Auburn. So a few days before that it was Texas. Sometime later this week maybe it'll be Kansas or California or Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, Illinois, Idaho, maybe Wisconsin, New Mexico, Arizona. The agonies are intensely personal, and every agony is agonizing for different reasons and yet all the same. Because someone's loved one has been involuntarily volunteered. Because someone's loved one has been bent back over the altar and sacrificed so that what is largely a group of terrified white people can hang on to their guns. But it, black, white, Native American, Asian, doesn't matter. A dead human is a dead human. And suffering is suffering. But it is particularly galling here in the United States because we act as if it's okay. Not we, not you, not I. But there are millions of Americans who will proudly tell you how desperately they need their handguns. And I do. I draw a line between shotguns and rifles and such. And handguns and automatic, semi-automatic firearms that have only one purpose. And that is to kill another human being. That's the only purpose they have. If you have a handgun, it is because at some point in time you have contemplated what you thought was the possibility that somewhere down the road you would need to kill another human being. Or the government. Don't forget that part. That's always That's always the right wing's biggest selling point. Well, we're keeping our guns because we're patriotic, and someday we may have to turn them on the government. When, please? For heaven's sakes. It's just silliness. Or it would be silliness if it weren't so damned deadly. Answering your question, no, if you want... Tim, if you want to ring into the program, you dial in. No, and it's I, not me. You had it right the first time, didn't you? Bob Kincaid Horn, and just press your little call button, and there we are. There are, so many stories available for this Moran Monday. Another gun story for you. This one has a slightly happier ending insofar as the victim did not die. But it is a clear case of the operation of the goddess of irony. It's the story of Ray Dolan, 39 years old. An author working on a book called The Kindness of America. See what I meant about the irony? Hitchhiking, thumbing, made it to Montana, where a man offered him a ride and then promptly shot him. 52-year-old Lloyd Danielson III was placed under arrest. He has a criminal history that includes assault. That according to the police in Glasgow, Montana. Fortunately, Mr. Dolan is expected to make a full recovery. And presumably will go back to work on his book, The Kindness of America. One hopes his book sells enough to pay for the hospital bills that he incurred in a very, very unkind medical system. I don't know if Mr. Dolan, age 39, had health insurance, but the story doesn't include that little bit of detail. But even surviving one of America's routine bloodlettings in the name of the Second Amendment, even surviving one is harrowing in a country that does not provide health care for all of its citizens. And by the way, speaking of morons, the double down continues. John Sununu is a chair of the Willard Romney campaign. And instead of backing away from what was obviously a howling error, they really are. They're going after this idea that America's overtaught. That's really what they're arguing. America is overtaught. America is too smart. America knows too much, because that's got to be the upshot if you think America has too many teachers. Yeah, instead of saying, wow, that was a really boneheaded thing to say. No, they're pressing the damned issue. This is John Sununu on MSNBC with Chris Jansing. from Jansing and Company. This is today.
I want to bring in former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu, who is a Romney supporter. Governor, it's good to see you. Good morning.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Everybody was talking about this, the Obama campaign using the comments that were made, obviously, by Mitt Romney on Friday, that we don't need more firefighters, more police. Let me play for you what Scott Walker had to say about that.
But the answer is not more big government. I know in my state our reforms allowed us to protect firefighters, police officers, and teachers. That's not what I think when I think of big government. I think of the bigger sense is more government regulations, more stimulus, more things that take money out of the private sector and put it in the hands of the government.
Do you agree with that? And do you think that there's a better way that Mitt Romney could have made his point than to single out firefighters, police officers, and teachers?
Well, let me respond as a taxpayer, not as a representative of the Romney campaign. There are municipalities, there are states where there is flight of population. And as the population goes down, you need fewer teachers. As technology contributes to community security and dealing with issues that firefighters have to issue, you would hope that you can, as a taxpayer, see the benefits of the efficiency in personnel that you get out of that. So there may be others who run up.
There may be others who run away from those comments,
but I'm going to tell you that there are places where just pumping money in to add to the public payroll is not what the taxpayers of this country want.
Do you think that taxpayers of this country want to hear fewer firefighters, fewer teachers, fewer police officers? I guess from a strategic standpoint.
If there's fewer kids in the classroom, the taxpayers really do want to hear that there will be fewer teachers. Absolutely.
But that's a very kind of geographically specific argument, isn't it?
Well, you've got a lot of places where that is happening. You have a very mobile...
Really? Really? We've got places in America where there are too many teachers. We've got places in America where the teacher-to-student ratio is, say, below 12 to 1. If we do, those places are as rare as hen's teeth. I promise you, they are. This is craziness. It makes me want to drink. It makes me feel like that. I've awakened in a world that ate the brown acid. The natural, normal, logical question to ask is the question that I put, and of course that means no one will ask it. Tell me, you godforsaken, motherless, soulless repiglickens, where are our children being taught too much? Where? Tell me. Where are they learning too well? Where is the dropout rate not high enough? Reckon that man that watched his house burn to the ground, reckon he'd like to have a real live, honest to God fire department? Instead of that sort of Ayn Randian miracle fire department that watches houses burn down over an issue of $75. Just asking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Sandra.
No, I just had to call in because it's just when I was tripping on that whole soundbite you played, it's just how, I mean, did you hear the media person saying, oh, is there another way that Mitt Romney could have said, let's get rid of teachers and fire people? I mean, do you understand that the for-profit media is like all okay with the sort of death spiral of the public sector now? Now we're just trying to frame it up a bit. I mean, you know, just helping Mitt Romney to express something that odious, you know, I mean, I'm about ready to say the game is up. You know what I mean? I'm so, I completely am disgusted and disturbed by, you know, how things are going. And, you know, I'm really wondering if they haven't just thrown Obama over the or under the bus, too. I don't, you know, I'm sort of wondering if we really need to get ready to say President Romney, you know, because Obama seems to be falling under the, going by the way of Truman. You know, if you want a real Republican, vote for one. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I do.
And I just don't, I'm beginning to wonder about his whole, because, you know, like I think I tweeted, I said the biggest state they need to worry about is Germany.
That is the absolute truth.
And
and lo and behold, guess look who the Romney advisor goes and gives an interview to. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't see that. What was that?
Oh, one of his campaign principals gave an interview to a German paper saying that, you know, basically saying America and Europe need more austerity.
Well, the road that Europe is going down, that's just, it's just sort of a disaster. It's just like watching this kind of slow motion train wreck, because I don't care what they say about this, fake, no, whatever bailout. No. Spain is now in the clutches of what Ireland and Greece and Portugal is. I don't care how they spin it, because certain debt now is becoming subordinate to this new loan.
Right.
So, you know, that just means more bailouts are on the way. And as we said, or as I said, Spain is too big to bail out. It ain't going to be bailed out. So I'm not too sure what road they're going down, but it's a really scary one. And when Obama rolled out on Friday, I was like, damn, this shit is getting real funky. Because his ass is out there saying, you know what? You need to do something. Do something! I'm like, I don't know if that's going to help you, Obama, but yeah. So Germany is a swing state we all need to be looking at right now.
I agree wholeheartedly, because, they're the ones who are going to make the determination as to whether or not Europe rises or falls. And we can catch that flu, can't we, Sandra?
Well, and the thing about it, really, I mean, it's just kind of ironic, is that, you know, England and America had a big hand in designing the political system that Germany has, which was designed to go glacier, slow. It was designed that way. In fact, it is the actual design of what this system should be, except it's functioning. But it don't function with a sort of laissez-faire, fucked-up Anglo-Saxon market that everyone's bowing down to. You can't have it both ways. The any sort of change in Germany isn't going to happen like we have over here, where you just sort of come up with a tarp on Friday and destroy the financial system over the weekend and open up on Monday with something else. It don't work that way in Germany. So it's bad. This situation's kind of bad. And Ireland and Greece must be saying, you know, what the fuck? Where's our deal?
Right. Yeah. Well,
Greece is probably gonna, it's empowering I forget the guy's name, the leader of the left. This is all empowering him. Why the hell would he now do anything but demand a better outcome for his country if Spain can get this quote, and I put it in big quotes, you know, just a bank bailout?
Right. Because it did not come, allegedly did not come with nearly the strings that came to with Greece and Ireland, right?
No, but they can't, because Spain is too big. This is the thing. Like, you can't do it. Spain's been under austerity for years already now. So what, now you're going to tell them to do more?
Yeah, the unemployment rate, the Spanish unemployment rate is what?
It's not, yeah, it's 50% for the youngins and 23, 24 overall.
Yeah, generally 23, 24, but if you're young, you're screwed.
Yeah. And so they're not going to demand those sort of austerity. I mean, Finland is trying to come out with, oh, we want you to do this, that, and the third. But that's the problem with Europe. They cannot. They're like the Articles of Confederation is where Europe is at. And if they want to continue on with their sort of neoliberal project, they got to get deeper and more interdependent. And good luck with that.
And so this the Romney advisor's name, Sandra, was Glenn Hubbard. Apparently not the same Glenn Hubbard who used to play second base for the Braves. No.
He's an economist. I've heard of him.
Yeah. He gave an interview he authored an op-ed in a German newspaper at the Handelsblatt, and he said the advice of the U.S. government regarding solutions to the crisis is misleading for Europe and especially for Germany. He went on to say that the Obama administration's efforts to persuade Germany to stand up financially weak governments and banks in the Eurozone so that the Greek crisis would not spread to other states. He said he and Mr. Romney opposed that. In other words, I guess we can say that the Romney campaign would say to Europe to do what Romney wanted to do to the U.S. auto industry, and that is just let it die.
Well, no, that's because the European Central Bank could bring the crisis to an end today, but this is just a means to destroy the welfare state. I mean, this is all political now. It's no longer economic.
And that's what Paul Krugman said to that one right winger in the UK. He said you're not even talking about policy anymore. He said you are taking policy and using it as a means of advancing political ideology.
Yeah, that's all it is now. But I mean, it's really, it is disturbing to see, Obama in this situation. I just shake my head. I'm like, damn, all you had to do, dude, was double that stimulus and you wouldn't be looking like you're looking now. I'm sorry. It's like, I don't want to hear about, he couldn't do anything. But at one point, he had all levers of government. So I'm past that excuse. But I am worried on some, let's see, what is the upside of a Romney presidency? Oh, right. They ain't gonna fuck up Social Security. I'm more concerned about Social Security with President Obama than I am Romney.
Yeah, because the Republicans learned the lesson of George Bush and his political capital.
And I don't, I think what's left of the opposition would, rise to the occasion, whereas Obama has completely demobilized, the people who could stop it. On some levels, but who knows? I mean, I'm not going to really make any predictions. I'll take it back because you never know what's going to happen in 6 months. But the Europe, people need to realize that the Europe question is a huge factor for us because if they don't handle that right, wow, bad things can happen.
Well, and it's very, not just bad things. I mean, this is not just Dennis Hopper. No, really bad things. They can take out the global system more. In essence, can they not?
Well, especially with the slowing of the BRIC countries. I mean, Brazil, China, India. India is really suffering, and so it's not going to take much. But the other thing that's interesting about the European thing is that Asia. They're like, oh wait one damn minute, because in '97 when they had their little hiccup. Well, the West made them just completely restructure everything, and there was some real suffering that happened behind that.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're looking at what's going on with Europe and how the IMF is treating them. They're like, oh, shit, okay, you have at it. So you're not going to get much help coming out of Asia for this now because, the IMF is not acting in the same way. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people suffered and died behind the structural requirements that went down in after the sort of Asian financial crash. So, it's messed up. The globalization, if they can just acknowledge that it's kind of done, that would be great. But usually what follows, what was the last thing that followed the end of a globalized period? Oh, right. That was World War One. So.
Yeah, it kind of was, wasn't it?
Yes. So I don't, I'm kind of, it's all a bit nervous. It's nerve-wracking. And it's really nerve-wracking because, maybe it's because you study history, but there's such feckless leadership now, isn't it? God, it's weak.
Well, I think feckless is the perfect word, because the primary concern, that you get the sense that the primary concern that undergirds all of these so-called leaders' actions has nothing to do with the well-being of people. It has to do with the further accumulation and shifting of wealth to the people who already have the vast majority of it in the first place.
Oh, I know, but also you're also sort of shaking your head because, you know, what pops up in my head a couple of times a day at this point is, you know, 400 parts per million. I'm sorry. I'm like, shit, you know, because my little nieces are 9. Ooh, they could definitely be around another 70 years. What's that going to be like? Sounds like hell. I literally mean hell.
I think about that. Well, you make me feel like maybe I'm not as insane as most of the time I think I am. Because I do sit around thinking about that. I think,
you know,
and it's not just 70 years from now. The hell may start in 5. We don't know.
No, I know. I'm just saying, though, but that's like, you know, something that, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, all these people scrambling around, you know, trying to hoard their wealth, and then, you know, we're talking maybe 3 generations down, this shit is not livable.
Right. People sitting in Virginia Beach with water up to their necks and not allowed to say climate change or sea level rise.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reality. And the other problem is we never know what you don't know. All you can do is look at history and find out what has in the past. You don't know what dumbass little seemingly inconsequential thing is gonna throw the ping pong ball into Jim's room full of mouse traps. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know.
Who's sitting by his hearth in England in 1913 would have thought that the murder of an Austrian archduke would wind up getting an entire European generation killed? How is that worth it? But then, you know, we look around here and we've got stuff like people who still are clamoring to go to war with Iran.
Oh, I know, and also we got really dumb political actors who can't, for example, if I was Obama, I would be out there doing one of them prime time things, telling everybody what good things are happening because of his health care thing now, before them son of a bitches come out with their decision. I mean, these little things aren't that difficult to do. I mean, if I can come up with it in my head, what's wrong with his handlers? What are they doing? He's just going to sit back and let that signature legislation just be pulled out from under? I'd be on TV daily talking about what this means for your family and watch the Supreme Court roll over if he was doing that. Everything's political. You know, the Supreme Court ain't nothing. They ain't got a sword. They ain't got a purse. Talk their asses down and watch them come up with the decision you want them to.
Yeah, how many divisions does the Chief Justice control? Is that?
No, I'm just saying, though, but it's just kind of like, you know, makes you wonder really what the hell is going on, because, these politicians...
Well, but the one comment that he did make, and I, because I've told you before about all the crazy-ass right-wing press releases I get every day, the one comment that he did make just suddenly blew up in his face. You know, here's dumbass Romney saying we don't need any more teachers, and what was the... And Barack Obama said the private sector is doing fine?
Oh, I know. And it's just kind of like, and to what? The point where he had to come back out again, it's just like, oh, no, please.
Yeah.
And it's pathetic.
I mean, meanwhile, and you'll get a kick out of this, meanwhile, our West Virginia had its state Democratic convention this weekend. Boss Man Wayne went down to it. And based on the fact that we have a governor and a junior senator, both of whom have said, well, I don't know if I can support that Barack Obama, the Democratic Party of the state of West Virginia passed a resolution, and all the other resolutions they passed, Wayne showed this to me, all the other resolutions they passed were, you know, in Calibri 11-point, you know, normal type. They passed one resolution that was in, like, 18-point font, bold-faced, that said, every candidate for office in the Democratic Party shall support every other Democratic candidate, state, local, or national. And that was aimed right at Joe Manchin and right at Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, because their loyalties have been more toward coal than toward the country or their own political party.
And they have to send out a memo to remind them dumbasses?
Yeah, yeah, and they're both just as silent as graven images so far on it.
Yeah, well, that guy, your senator, he's terrible.
Oh, he's awful. By the way, we got a note in from Andy. He said, regarding Sandra's conversation, Glenn Hubbard is a neoliberal piece of excrement.
Right. No, I have heard of him, and not good.
Yeah, he said he's a free markets, free trade, laissez-faire economist. This guy was exposed in Charles Ferguson's movie Inside Job as a corporate sellout, a complete Wall Street hack.
That's right. That's right. I saw that. That's how I remember the name. He was well slimy. Did you see his performance in that?
No.
You got to... he was like the worst kind of sort of corporate sleaze, yes.
Well, yeah, Andy says, a man that can be bought by the top 1%, the ruling plutocracy. Hubbard makes this is strong. Hubbard makes ex-Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin and Larry Summers look like a bunch of choir boys. This guy has no remorse for his deregulatory policies during the Bush regime and helping to cause the problems Europe and the U.S. are now suffering. Not to mention the total collapse of our banking system from laissez-faire lack of oversight and over-leveraging of capital, total financial system collapse. You want to blame someone for our financial collapse? Hubbard, Andy notes, is right up there.
Oh, no, yeah, I now that he mentioned I remember him clearly because I was disturbed. The sort of sociopathic radar popped up when I saw that one. He's bad. He is bad.
And so he goes to Germany to argue that the Germans should let Europe burn.
Well, I mean, isn't
that essentially what he's saying?
Yeah, that's the melon mentality. You know, liquidate this. Just like Romney was talking about, liquidate everything, purge the system. They're so obsessed with what's the latest thing I saw that had me rolling? Sadomonetarism. I'm like, damn, that's a good.
What a word.
That shit is on, though, because, you know, if you have any clue about the financialization of every goddamn thing, that's perfect, because, you know, it is sort of, you know, they're perfectly okay bailing out this bank system to the tune of $125 billion and just be okay with 30 and 50% unemployment. I mean, it's something just terribly, terribly wrong with this.
Well... And what this is where I sort of get lost, Sandra. What do these ruling elites expect will become of people who are trapped in persistent, perhaps decade-long, 20-30% unemployment? What do those people usually do if one studies history?
Yeah, but, you know, maybe they want the 19th century, you know, because it takes a while. And, you know, the sort of... Bread and Circus is in full effect here. You know, Huxley won out, not Orwell. You understand?
Well, not Orwell yet.
Well, not yet, but Huxley is definitely on top at the moment because with the, I don't know if you've read that book recently, but it's frightening how prescient, especially with the, don't worry about not getting enough information. We'll just give you too much information. And ain't that the internet?
It kind of is.
You know, it's just like, good Lord.
And we'll make sure that there's enough of the information out there that is absolutely meaningless.
And if, yeah.
I mean, look at the traffic that...
Oversaturation.
Yeah, look at the traffic that some of the pop culture sites get, you know, whether it's E! Or, the paparazzi-type tabloids. Those places have traffic coming out their ears.
Oh, no, it's just millions upon, yeah, it's incredible. I think that, I don't know. I mean, you know, you can have everything reduced, and the way they're kind of rapidly destroying the public system here, I mean, really, it's quite frightening. I don't know if you, Diane Ravitch, is that her name?
Ravitch?
She's... Used to be in the Bush administration. Now she's just totally anti.
Oh, yeah.
She's great. Well, she had a post on her blog talking about this. There's this sort of wrist device that the Gates Foundation is doing research on that they want to put on you, your teachers and your students, that can measure their attention levels. I'm not joking.
That's creepy.
It is. I'll send the blog to you because I can't really explain it all right now, but it is beyond and beyond because it takes into account all this kind of algorithm, Facebook type stuff, Google stuff, marketing. It's all tied together. And cherry on the top, you can control your students better and you know, write the test better too and hold your teeth.
Well, how long until that includes a little electrode too?
Well, you know, that's what I'm
for
saying.
Getting little Johnny's attention.
And that's what they ended the blog post. Now, keep in mind the blog post was somewhat facetious, but the research is real. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a real deal that's out there, a courtesy of that eugenics Bill Gates. Sorry to use the E word, but I'm sorry. His shit is well weird. Okay?
Well,
I'm not feeling Bill Gates. That's out there.
Well, yeah, right. But, of course, you know, Bill Gates is at the top 1% of the 1%, so he doesn't have to worry about anyone ever wanting to strap a bracelet on him.
No, but they too concerned with food, seeds, and all this kind of weird-ass shit. It kind of gives me the heebies. It's like, why you want to control food and land and all this madness? Getting ready for the die-off.
Yeah, right. Paging Mr. Malthus.
But anyway, I have to send that to you because, I mean, you definitely would get a kick out of it and just think, wow, you know. So the public education here is being severely undermined, and then you have, you know, Bitcoin and Farmville and whatever other sort of shit that goes on online. And
yes, I'm a simpleton. I'm looking forward, I admit it. To the NBA finals.
Oh, listen, whatever you got to do to get through it, you know. Hey, you know, I'm not prone to
rooting for the Celtics. I was raised a Lakers fan, but you know, I was rooting for all I was worth, but it just didn't happen.
Well, now you can root for some real youngins, and that will be Oklahoma.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, and I, you know, I put that up on Twitter and Facebook over the weekend that, you know, I'm severely conflicted because, you know, it's Oklahoma Stan.
Yeah, I know.
But no, I think that's where and you know what? They may do Miami. They may.
Well, who knows? They looking damn strong. I'm like, whoa. So, you know, anything to deny LeBron. I'm not a fan. Screw him. He can keep losing, and they can keep talking about, oh, how come he hasn't won a ring until he's 40, and then he'll never win one, and that'll be the end of that.
Yeah, the only thing that puts me off about Oklahoma City possibly winning it is having to, you know, listen to Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe or something. That, you know, that Jesus delivered the victory.
What was that? I don't know where I heard the story about Little Wayne wanting to get in. He couldn't get into the game, and he was demanding that they give him free tickets to get in.
No.
And it's just like, oh, right, the rich wanting things for free. Why, I'm not surprised. You know, the whole story was just foul. It's like, huh? What?
File that under. Don't you know who I am?
Not only that, but then, you know, Little Wayne, it's just, you know, it's like, that. Now that's ignorant, okay? You know? that definitely is.
No, but you got me real good over the weekend with the Siri bit.
Oh, snap. That shit was funny. And I was laughing at homeboy talking about, can you play my Coldplay? That was like, wow, no, not Coldplay. And he said, Siri, I've never been to jail. It was very funny. That whole thing was hilarious, right?
Oh, yeah, but I'm a vegetarian.
I'm a vegan, yeah. Siri. Yeah, you know, no. I don't know. And the way it ended with swag?
Yeah, yeah, swag, 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 swag.
Yeah, that's so wrong, but it was funny. I don't know, I thought it was hilarious.
No, I called Agnes. Look at this.
No, I mean, it's so wrong. I just think, oh, my God. You know?
Oh, and I don't know what it says, but Marty's telling me that we both need to read Dave Zirin's latest column.
Oh, I will, yeah.
Okay. Sandra, good to talk to you. You have a good evening.
Too.
All right, bye now. Sandra calling from California. I don't know. Go check the Twitter feed and you can find the Siri piece. It's a little suspect, as Sandra might say. Let's try a little experimentation here. Let's try Skype. I've got Tim here. You there, Tim?
Yeah, I'm here, Bobby. What's up? Can you hear me?
I hear you, and we're gonna have a little fun here. We're gonna tweet a little audio, and we're gonna pull back a little bit on your high end, and
yeah. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. That's the other thing. The thing is on with internet telephony and Skype and things like that, you can get some dodgy audio. And I just wanted to see what sort of thing I would get. I appreciate you participating in the experiment.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, the reason why I'm calling is because, you know, Dunk asked me to do something on the Egg Act, because I'm also I'm a writer now for PoliticusUSA.com.
Awesome.
So I said, I was reading it, and I said, yeah, why don't I write something about it? And while reading, you know, the Egg Act, that's StopTheEgg.org, and got a lot of this stuff is common sense, you know, what Dennis Sinich wants, and it's like, no duh.
Yeah, it is. It is common sense. We have evidence to suggest that a certain thing is poisoning people. When you have evidence that something is poisoning people, you find out how it's doing it and what the transmission modes are, and then if there's no way of stopping it, you stop poisoning people. I mean, that is common sense, isn't it, Tim?
Yeah. I mean, I live in California, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, no duh.
who is your House member?
My congresswoman is Judy Chu.
Oh, she's on board, man.
Cool.
Yeah, so
she's
I would.
She's a professor in college.
Yeah, so you might send her a thank you.
Okay.
And tell her you're really proud of her.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, she was also my professor in college, my advisor in the Asia Club.
No, really?
When I was going to college.
Oh, that's so cool.
I got her home phone number, but I can't give it out.
Okay, well, I won't ask.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so, like I said, reading through it, I'm like, I mean, are people that, I guess if they are greedy enough to even kill themselves by not, you know, abiding by these rules that are already there, like 33 U.S.C.'s, 134, and was it the Under the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act of 1977? There are rules here already, but they're willing to kill themselves and kill others and kill children.
Right, and what happens there is that the people who work in the industry, you got to die of something sometime. And at least I'm being well paid, and here I am dropped out of high school when I was 16. Who'd ever thought I'd be making $80,000 a year?
I guess coming from LA, it's like $80,000. That's a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money.
Around here, it is a ton of money.
Yeah, but is it worth dying for? No.
Well, but that ain't what's killing them. It's probably liberals or something.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my gosh. I guess my mindset is kind of like, you know, we see things, and it's like, is $80,000, $90,000 worth getting sick and dying for? And then you end up going bankrupt because they can't pay the medical bills, which $80,000 probably wouldn't cover, regardless of where you are. I mean, these people just don't think. And the politicians are saying, oh, yeah, look, they're getting, you know, how many hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars from these coal mining corporations, and they just don't care. Well, one person does, Dennis Kucinich, Judy Chu is another one. There are some people who care, but they're just so damn greedy and so damn murderous.
Yeah. And for all their talk about their love of the unborn, you know, those are the ones, the unborn are paying a terrible price in this region.
I know. Now we add radiation to that too, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing I'm going to be covering pretty soon, because I finished speaking to my partner, by the way, and we're getting into, I guess, production whatever that, you know, production, meaning, you know, timeline production, who and where and when to, you know, to start shooting. So I'm having a meeting tomorrow, and we're getting set up to go to Japan. But, and the research we've done, we were researching for 3 or 4 months, and the contamination that's happening in Japan is here in the U.S. already. And it's not just hitting the West Coast of the United States. It's hitting your area, too. It's hitting Maine. It's hitting everywhere in between. Wherever it rains, radiation falls, it's going to happen. And I got it. And because when 311 happened, when we learned about the, you know, the destruction, when we learned about the explosion at Daiichi in Fukushima, I started yelling and screaming. And I wanted to do something. So I met, you know, my partner, this woman who works for NHK. Well, she's a contractor for NHK. And I said, let's work. She said, okay, I want to do it too. So we're aiming probably by fall or early winter. Early fall, yeah, late fall to early winter in Japan, because I don't want to go during the summer because it's hot as hell. But we're going to record everything and get everything we can about what's happening, not just in Japan, or not just in Fukushima, but all of Japan and the U.S. and what's happening in your area too. So you combine the radioactive fallout, like cesium and all that, with the trash that the ADAC is speaking about.
That's amazing.
I get so damn mad. I mean, is it worth it?
No, hell no, no. No, it's not worth it. Well, wait. It depends on who you ask, Tim. If you ask a member of the 1% who don't have to live anywhere near what they're doing and just scrape the profits off and pay next to nothing in taxes, you're damned right it's worth it. If, however, you're one of the people whose lives are being sacrificed for those 1% profits, then it's a different calculus, isn't it?
Yep. Doesn't Charles Koch live in Kansas or somewhere like that?
Are they headquartered there? Or I don't think he lives there. Nobody that rich would live in Kansas, would they?
I don't know, because if they, one of them live in the Midwest, they're getting contaminated by the coal plus the radiation. Don't they realize that they will end up dead, or they just don't care? Because eventually, you know, I was talking with Lottie, and I was speaking to, you know, Chris Ekotikas, and even if they were to head south of the equator, like in Peru or whatever, or even Argentina, the radiation, the fall is going to hit there in maybe a few years, 10 years at most. So there's nowhere on Earth where it's going to be safe. Plus, you also have the problems you're facing at Three Mile Island, the one in Georgia, the one up in, I think it's Oregon, that's leaking tritium. And there's a bunch of other facilities that are having problems. And these people don't get it. And it's so aggravating. I know I shouldn't really get emotional, but it's...
Yeah, but if you don't, there's something wrong, Tim. You know what I mean? There really is.
Well, because, you know, when I first heard what happened in Fukushima, I mean, I was crying, I was getting angry. You could ask anyone in the chat room how I was acting. I mean, I was swearing more than normal. I was getting pissed. I was even getting pissed off at Obama. I mean, I was getting...
And you stopped listening to Rush for a while.
I was
trying to lighten the moment, but yeah, no, I understand very, very well, because it's the kind of anger that can inform your existence in a place like this and blind you to the absolute necessity of the work. You know, anger, fury is very, very consuming, and can keep you from getting done what needs to be done. So I really, really do identify and understand what you're getting at. And I really appreciate you participating in this little experiment. I've got to roll now, but you proved that it works, Tim, and I appreciate it. And thanks for all that you're doing, sincerely.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Tim calling from L.A. with what I thought was quite good sound quality. So Skype is now in the mix here on the horn, which is nice. And that does bring us to the end of the program. Thank you to all of you who contributed this evening and have contributed previously to keep all of this going. It is the only thing that keeps us going, and we do appreciate it. Thank you for meeting Darlene's challenge. We will be back tomorrow evening, of course, and I hope you will be as well. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, is behind the possum line, back behind the cornbread curtain, working under deep cover. My head writer, David from Tennessee, is taking some time away, much needed. Thanks go out to John Fox, setting them up and knocking them down and keeping things in proper working order. And all the streams stream and all the packets pass because of the heroic, decade-long work of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. I really have got to get Ben on the program to talk about the history of the White Rose Society. Just do. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and stoptheache.org. You can go to either site and learn about the AIKE campaign and how you can be a part of it and be a part of the solution to what has been called Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Smith is next.
Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of the sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is, by Jove, it is Tuesday.
It is the 12th of June, 2012. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. A little thing we like to call conversation radio, available only on the series of tubes. If someone tries to bring you the horn via a big truck, don't trust them. Internet-only broadcasting for, going on 7 years? Hard to believe, isn't it? And some of you have been with us for almost that entire time. Some of you have been with us for that entire time. We are all the members of the Horn family. And it's a mighty pleasant little family of which to be a member. We are listener-supported. We are supported by the kind contributions of the people who share their time and their ideas to keep this all going. There is a contribution button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Both of them work equally well. And we are much appreciative for all that goes toward keeping this little experiment in the First Amendment going. This little experiment in perhaps not the First Amendment, but certainly freedom of expression. With caveats. We offer no freedom of expression here to right-wingers. They are expressly not welcome. It's one of the nice things I think you can count on in tuning into the Horn. You don't have to run the risk of listening to some knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, snake-handling, floor-pulling, strychnine-swigging, right-wing religion industry freak when you tune in here. They ain't welcome. Just goodbye now. Right? Right. Why? Is that because I get my jollies No. It's because they're idiots. It's because we have learned for, yea, verily, something on the order of 25 years now, that they have if not longer, if not an entire generation, if not going back into the 1960s with the weird little John Birchers and the Alan Stang report. Think about it. That they have nothing to offer the body politic. They have absolutely nothing to offer in terms of the considered or good faith creative solutions for going forward into a future that utterly refuses to be the mythological past that the right wing so yearns for. So don't come here thinking you're going to get to hear some right winger talking about how there's a race of men who live in the trees, and I say, I live all night for calls like these. Thanks for calling. No, it ain't going to happen. What you're going to hear here is a broad spectrum and a wide variety of folks from around the country, all of whom share the common idea that this country is worth saving. It's in pretty bad shape right now. And it's not in bad shape because of anything progressives or liberals did. It's in bad shape because it's been put this way. I was thinking along these lines when I received an email earlier this evening. From our buddy Ron in Raleigh. He says, a couple of weeks ago, I was let go from the temp position that was supposed to become permanent. Oddly enough, I was the oldest worker on the job. Age discrimination, you ask? Since that day, I've had more time to read and absorb current affairs, Bob. Things are bad and getting worse, not for the elites, just for folks that actually have to work for a living. One article I read was concerning wage theft. Wage theft has nothing to do with low-wage employees stealing from employers, just the opposite. Well-to-do corporations such as Walmart are stealing from their low-wage employees. The shorting of hours, making workers work through breaks, not paying final hours once workers are terminated. Don't forget working workers off the clock after they've clocked out at the end of their shift, Ron. The corporations are free to do so because there is no pushback from the government, and, of course, no union pushback because unions have been gutted.
Millions of dollars are being stolen from the people that can least afford it, and you know where that largesse is going. Another article notes that family net worth has declined to the level of the 1990s. I think 1992, to be precise. I saw that statistic earlier today myself and couldn't help reflecting, why, yes, yes, that would be just as America was emerging from its long national nightmare of 8 years of Ronny Reagan followed by 4 years of Pappy Bush. Mm-hmm. Ron continues, median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 in 2010. Income has declined by 7.7% over the same period. How are we supposed to survive when income is going backwards and the cost of everything we need to live continues to increase in cost at a frightening pace? In my local paper today was an article that could be the death knell for a great many people. The article concerns the impending merger of Duke Power and Progress Energy. If these two companies merge, they'll be the only choice for 7.1 million consumers in a dozen states and some localities in Latin America. What the hell is the DOJ's antitrust division doing? 1,860 jobs at the corporate level up in smoke. I'm sure you can guess the alleged reason for the merger. Economies of scale. $1 billion in savings in the early years of the merger. My favorite, not charging customers for the cost of the merger, including $250 million of severance pay. Ron in Raleigh closes saying, please, if you've heard anything positive that is happening for the working class in America, let me know. This ledge seems to be getting narrower. Well, I wish I could. I'd love to. I'd like to tell you that somewhere in America there's a little worker's paradise. But there ain't one. Everywhere in the United States, working people are desperately clinging to whatever few and diminishing rights they have. There is nowhere in the United States where the rights of workers are expanding. Nowhere. I mean, think of it. You tell me. Are workers' rights expanding in Alabama? Are they expanding in Florida? Are they expanding in Massachusetts? Or Michigan? Or Minnesota? Or Wisconsin? Is it getting better in California? Is it getting better in Oregon or Washington? Is it getting better in Missouri or Kansas? Hawaii? Alaska? Guam? Puerto Rico? The Marianas Protectorate? Uh-uh. No. Statistic that Ron mentioned, and I just kind of slapped myself on the forehead in that sort of the you know, I could have had a V8 motion. Another article notes that family net worth has declined to the level of the 1990s. Median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 in 2010. That means in the space of 3 years, median net worth lost almost $50,000. Imagine what that was like for people on the way underside of that $126,400. Or on the way underside of that $77,300. But it was lost, right? Median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 in 2010. It was lost. That $50,000 per median household was lost. Or was it? Or was it? Was it lost? or was it stolen? Because things like median net worth don't just jingle through a hole in your pocket and wind up sort of forming a breadcrumb trail of coins as you amble down the sidewalk looking for work. No, it goes somewhere. Now, where do you suppose it went? Anybody? Come on, it's just like Romper Room. I can see the little hands out there. Yeah. They, come on, want it all. They want it all. And they are damn sure not above taking it. And they done did. When we see median net worth in America just sort of disappear like that in 3 years' time, remember, nothing ever happens on Wall Street but somebody's there making a buck on it. And when that median net worth was lost, people got rich. We tend to forget in watching the demise of financial institutions during the meltdown that there were people who got fabulously rich watching our economy revert to its ash state. Somebody's got all those $50,000 in his or her pockets. All those $50,000 are financing some lobster lunches. Because a lot of people got rich, not poor, on credit default swaps, on derivatives. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh writing says, yeah, I know. It's all in Mitt Romney's sofa cushions. Well, you know, Ron, it kind of is. It's certainly in the sofa cushions of the predator class. That is hard to escape. Marty, Ron was referring to the merger between Duke Energy and Progress Energy, which spells disaster for a lot of people. Then again, a lot of us don't have a choice on who our power company is in the first place. Most of us get a Hobson's choice. No horse at all, or the horse by the... That's the way it is here with Appalachian Power. Just is. A lot of interesting stories in the stack this evening. Talking about the working class, and Ron mentioned age discrimination. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not offering this story because there's anything particularly noteworthy about it. It's just a car wreck story. But it's one of those little journalism moments where I wind up going, I bet there's more story here than most people realize. Of course, we will probably not hear any more of it. It's just another car wreck story. The dateline is from a little town called Summersville, West Virginia, just a matter of about 20 minutes from here. It is one of the world's most notorious speed traps. There's always somebody pulled over on the side of the road getting a ticket. They quite frequently have a Canadian license plate. shaking down Canadians is the pastime of the local Somersville Police Department. No, but the dateline is Somersville, West Virginia, and it simply reads in the Charleston Gazette, a Nicholas County woman was killed Sunday after a tractor-trailer rear-ended the car she was riding in near Mount Nebo, police said. It was along U.S. Route 19, which is the four-lane highway that runs through Somersville. It was the details that caught my eye. The tractor-trailer rear-ended a pickup truck. The 78-year-old woman who was killed was a passenger in that pickup truck. Sad. Even a full one-ton pickup truck does not win in an altercation, especially from the rear, with a semi-tractor trailer. The story is silent on whether the tractor trailer was perhaps a coal hauler or whether it was just some truck, some semi. Yeah, John, Dr. John said, I know where this is going. Coal truck? Don't know. Don't know, John. Ain't in the report. And you know, John and I had an interesting conversation about local journalism on the program last night, and this is one of those moments where you'd like to have them. That whole who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much thing. What kind of semi-tractor trailer? I mean, was it a car hauler? That'd have a lot of extra inertial force. Was it loaded with coal? Was it hauling ass along and empty? Was it a timber truck? We got a lot of timbering goes on around here. Those things are terrifying. No, that information is not conveyed, but this information is. And it's why I bring it to you on the heels of Ron's note from Raleigh. The driver, one Foster March of Glenville, rear-ended a 2007 Chevrolet pickup truck driven by... And there's one thing I left out in reading that to you. Driven by... Age 76. I am no ageist, okay? I'm really not. I would like to perhaps be 76 and doing this show because I love doing this. I have loved it since we began doing it, and I have never ceased to love it. And I think to be doing this at 76 would be, it beats the hell out of gum in your oatmeal. But by the same token, where things like semi-tractor trailers are concerned, why? And so we know it was not somebody driving a Walmart truck because the gentleman, the 76-year-old who plowed into the rear end of the pickup truck was from Glenville, West Virginia. Which is also part of coal country. And not too awfully far from Somersville. Years old. Now, does it go without saying? Is it absolutely given? Is it de facto that if you're 76 years old, you ought not be driving a tractor trailer? I will leave that consideration to you. But there is something wrong with a country where a 76-year-old man has to drive a tractor trailer. Isn't there? Well, he was just trying to stay active, Bob. Well, great!
do that. But 76? And you gotta get behind the wheel of a monster truck every day so the lights will stay on? Because you can't make it on Social Security? And you didn't have any kind of a meaningful pension? I don't know. See, Clayton, you get it. Yeah, well, you know, Bob, you can't drive the show up somebody's ass and kill them. True. But is this one of those moments where if we told, George W. Bush about it, he'd say,
I find that uniquely American that a 76-year-old man is still driving a semi-tractor trailer truck and rear-ending people on four-lane highways. Uniquely American.
The driver of the pickup truck was also transported to the hospital with unknown injuries. No word on whether the decedent was wearing a seatbelt. Not a whole lot of word of any sort of thing in this here newspaper report. This being West Virginia, and this being rank speculation, odds are that that tractor trailer was one of two things. It was either a timber hauler or a coal truck. Long odds against it being a Walmart truck or a Kroger truck or, a truck transporting gasoline for one of the convenience store chains. Significantly better odds that it was either a timber truck or a coal truck. Because, see, here's how the coal truck business works in Appalachia. The coal companies, of course, hate actually paying human beings to do work. They hate it from the check-writing standpoint, and they hate it from the liability standpoint, and they hate it from the workers' comp standpoint, and they hate it from the accounting standpoint, from having to withhold things like FICA. So some several years back, they created this dodge whereby instead of hiring somebody to drive truck for the company, they created a small army of so-called, and those of you who follow labor issues will know what a pernicious phrase this is, a small army of so-called independent contractors. Rick Smith, for instance, my colleague who follows me every night on the horn, could tell you a lot about this. Rick was a driver. The coal company actually buys the brand new coal truck. And they say to the driver, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lease you this here truck. And after you've driven for us for X number of years, you're going to own the truck. It'll be all yours. And they pay pennies per the ton of coal hauled. The poor worker doesn't get paid by the hour, doesn't even get paid by the mile. He's responsible for his own Social Security withholdings and pays a premium penalty because he is an independent contractor. He has no recourse to workers' compensation if he is injured on the job. And the truck that he gets when he's done hauling is pretty much a rattletrap death rig, worn down to a frazzle. I don't know if that is the case here. I just know that a 76-year-old man was behind the wheel of an immense vehicle
when for reasons passing understanding and certainly not reported in this here report, he lost control of it and rear-ended a man and a woman in a pickup truck, sending the man to the hospital and the woman to her grave. One of the questions that needs to be answered is, did he have to drive that truck? Is this one of those tragedies from the 99%? 76 years old and jamming gears? One more day. One more day. So you can pay the power bill, pay the cable bill, pay the rent, the mortgage. Pay for the health insurance? No, he's got Medicare, doesn't he? Again, I don't want this to be perceived as some sort of ageism, but there is something profoundly disturbing in these very few details that we do have. The woman killed was 78 years old. The man who was sent to the hospital was 52. It didn't happen in the dark and still of the night on a rain-slick road. It happened yesterday. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And yesterday was a beautiful day. We are told at the end of the story that the investigation continues. And it will. It will continue if by that we mean inquiry will be made as to whether or not there are any improper substances in the bloodstream of the guy who rear-ended the couple. It'll continue. It will likely continue until the end of days for the man who was driving the truck. But the investigation, neither by the author of the story nor by the investigating law enforcement officer, the investigation will not continue as to why 76-year-old men who live in the greatest, richest country in the world are behind the wheel of a machine that is almost always inherently dangerous. Was he running loaded or unloaded? And I don't mean alcohol, I mean what was on the rig. I kind of wish Rick was handy. Rick Smith. I'd like to, because I am not an over-the-road truck driver, I'd like to have Rick's opinion as to whether or not folks need to be driving semis at the age of 76. What becomes of one's reflexes by 76? Did the man have a seizure? We had a story about that just yesterday. Republicans trying to make light and have a yuck, a ha-ha, over a man having a seizure and having three separate accidents, who happened to be the Secretary of Commerce, and trying to allege, with no information whatsoever, that the man was drunk. There are any number of possible reasons for this wreck. And I don't know if anybody else is like me. I checked the comments section on this story and there's not a peep. But I saw semi-tractor trailer and 76 years old, and a part of me said, stop! What? Is this really the America that we want? shouldn't, at 76 years old, shouldn't this man have been enjoying a second career or tilling, you know, tilling his garden or having some sort of, has he not? Because odds are, if he's 76 years old, he's probably, given that this is West Virginia, been working since he was 12. Doesn't an enlightened society at some point say, enough, you've earned your rest, go forth and enjoy the grandchildren, travel, see the country, do whatever it was you always dreamed of working when doing when you were too busy working to do it? Or at least provide that opportunity? He may not have Medicare. He may not have Social Security. He may just have to work until he dies. Or until someone else does. Or did. Like I said, not a big story, not earth-shattering, and certainly just like yesterday's massacre story. Just another day in the greatest, wealthiest nation in the world. Where the butcher's bill is paid by the innocents. And where the funeral directors reap the free market rewards. This from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, you find me a 76-year-old with no drugs in his system. I work on the shipping end of the distribution chain and occasionally see an elderly, look at who's talking, driver. Most of these guys are just hanging on to get what passes for a pension. Those pensions have been continually pushed further into the future by greedy trucking companies. Yeah. Yeah. Jim noting, based on earlier comments, unparalleled robbery by these bastards, Bob. They really do want it all. A return to wage slavery and feudalism. That's all the working class is good for, isn't it? Working? What do I mean, golden years? Work, damn it! Where else to go? Oh, let's see. Do we save that one for tomorrow? I don't know. I will throw this out there for your consideration. You may recall that Brother Albert called in talking about the furor over the EPA using drones, you know, to make sure that the CAFOs aren't completely poisoning the water supply, and how all the Second Amendment guardians are out there, they're going to fire at them, they're going to shoot me down, one of them government drones. You got to lead them real good. Probably take a little more than the 12-gauge. That's what I ordered my Israeli 50 caliber for. Well, if there's ever, if I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be like Groucho Marx and say whatever it is you're for, I'm against it. But this goofy idiot is a pretty good barometer for being able to tell right from wrong. If he's going in one direction, and you want to be on the right, moral, decent, upstanding, otherwise integrity side of things, you go the other way. I'm speaking, of course, about Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich, I'm socially secure, I'm comfortably well off. Today, in the Senate of the United States, where apparently boredom reigns supreme, Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, introduced a bill that would prohibit law enforcement agencies from using unmanned aerial vehicles, otherwise known as drones, to conduct surveillance without a warrant. Laudable. Sounds positively laudable, doesn't it? Ought to be an easy call. There's only one problem, and it wasn't brought on by that Kenyan, secret Kenyan Muslim with an anti-colonialist bias and a deep-seated hatred of white people. It goes back to the 1980s, something we students of history like to call the Rehnquist Court. Maybe even the Burger Court, I don't know. You might recall that Chief Justice Rehnquist, who was on the Burger Court too, you might recall that Chief Justice Rehnquist was whacked out of his mind on heavy-duty mind-altering substances for virtually the entire second half of his Supreme Court career. Wasted. You know, real Spicoli kind of. Dude, hear that? That's my brain. I'm on the Supreme Court of the United States and I'm toasty. Way back in the 1980s, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that the Fourth Amendment does not categorically prohibit warrantless aerial surveillance. It doesn't. And don't anybody tell Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, this or anything, because we wouldn't want actual brains to get in his way. But if the court has already made a ruling that something's not unconstitutional, then his little federal statute's not going to have much impact. The Preserve and Freedom from Unwarranted Surveillance Act of 2012 has been introduced, requires the government to obtain a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance. However, the government would not be required under the bill to obtain a warrant if they wanted to fly it over the borders and stare at Mexicans. You know, they ain't got none of them rights what Jesus done give us. Who does this protect? Well, the laws relating, for instance, to the poisoning of a public water supply by a giant industrial CAFO, those are criminal laws. Guess who gets protected? Yeah, it's not Cletus out there with his shooting gun growing on a patch of aqua buddha blue. No. It's people like Monsanto. It's people like ConAgra, Archer Daniels Midland, great big giant cow-killing, pig-killing, and chicken-killing enterprises. They're the ones that get protected by this. Just saying. I don't want, these are the words given by Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, to CNN. I don't want drones roaming across, crisscrossing our cities and our country, snooping on Americans. And that's the surveillance state that I'm very concerned about. And that's what our bill would stop. Coincidentally, he also introduced legislation that would utterly repeal the Patriot Act. No, he didn't. Are you kidding? No. Patriot Act's just fine. Fine as frog hair. These right-wingers never do anything that there isn't some sort of a benefit to the 1%. Remember, it was Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who said that he didn't think anybody'd be missing any hilltops in eastern Kentucky and Appalachia. So what if we blow a few of them up? And when the Upper Big Branch disaster took place, he said that, you know, people dying in gassy pits is just part of business. And the free market would regulate itself. So, there you have it. Oh, we're, like I said, there is no small amount of stuff to go into this evening. I guess we'll just say that that's more in Tuesday stuff for Ron Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Oh, a little update. While it's on my mind. I told you that I would be talking about the AIC Act every night for the foreseeable future. And I intend to be good to my word on this. We, as I noted, hope to see the bill introduced long about next week. And I got a project for you. Well, some of you. Do any of you live in New Jersey in either the districts of Representative Rush Holt or Representative Frank Pallone? They are both awesome members of the House of Representatives. And they need your phone call. They need to hear from people who live in their district telling them not to sit around, not to wait on the order of their going, but to go at once and sign on as original co-sponsors of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. We need that. Would it happen that you live in, say, Massachusetts? If you do, we've got a job for you, too. Because we need a Representative Ed Markey. To sign on. We'd like that a lot. So if it just so happens that you live in Representative Ed Markey's district, he needs a call from you. For those of you who might be in the jurisdiction of Frank Pallone, I have a phone number for you. Shucks, even if you're not, call him anyway. Be very, very nice, because he's been a real hero on mountaintop removal. And we need him to get on this bill, too. Representative Pallone can be reached at area code 202-225-4671. Area code 202-225-4671. Representative Pallone needs to hear from you. He needs to become an original co-sponsor. Of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. Betsy, then by all means, have your brother get in touch with his representative. He's in New Jersey, Texas Betsy's brother. Texas Betsy's brother is New Jersey, Texas Betsy's brother. She asks, is it two for Tuesday on the morning front? You know what? It may be. It may be. Because there is stuff we missed last night, or didn't have time for last night. not the least of which is, well, this one. First thing I thought when I saw this headline, sorry, that's a nasty little chuckle. First thing I thought when I saw this headline was, not if it was Steve Jobs, they wouldn't. Not if it was Dick Cheney, they wouldn't. Story comes out of California. The story of a woman there by the name of Toni Trujillo. She's 40 years old. Back in 2010, she went to California to look for specialized treatment of a kidney disorder that she has, that she developed when she was very young, causes inflammation of the kidneys, and she underwent her first kidney transplant in 1991. She needs a new one. Perfectly decent human being. She's been on dialysis since 2007, waiting for another kidney transplant. And now she's going to do some more waiting. Apparently, if one is on the transplant list, one is prone to being tested for a variety of substances. In this case, Ms. Trujillo tested positive for the use in California, legally, of cannabis. She was using cannabis not because she's some sort of... She didn't go to California for the marijuana. She went to California for the medical treatment. But while in California, she did have a consultation with an independent physician, you know, an MD, who said, well, you can take the drugs or you can smoke the dope. Well, he didn't say exactly that. He said medical marijuana might meet a lot of the same needs that prescription drugs do at the present time for you. So she began availing herself of medical marijuana. I learned something fascinating in this story that many medical marijuana providers in California actually have independent labs test their product to make sure that it doesn't have nasty shit on it or mold or fungi or anything. Mushroom walks into a bar. Bartender says, we don't serve your type in here. The mushroom says, why not? I'm a fun guy. Now, ostensibly the reason for Ms. Trujillo being removed from the transplant list was because the kidney transplant patients have a real problem with a genus of common molds called Aspergillum. No, I'm sorry, Aspergillus. Latin. Second declension. Nominative. Singular. One person did die back in 1988 from inhaling marijuana smoke that had been that had Aspergillus on it. Aspergillus is a real problem for transplant patients, but here's the thing. Aspergillus is in virtually every breath you take. It's not just on cannabis. So, here we go for poor Ms. Trujillo. Ms. Trujillo has to... She's going to a support group. They've made her admit that she has a problem, and that her life is out of control, and she's in a little 12-step program to get her away from the medical marijuana, and she's routinely and repeatedly drug tested, and if she can stay clean for 6 months, they'll put her back on the transplant list at the bottom. All the while making sure that even though she's sick, she feels extra bad about herself for being the filthy little addict that she is. Because everybody knows that cannabis is addictive. She has to go to counseling every week. And work her way through the 12 steps. Along with the random drug test to see if she's a good enough, clean enough person to be allowed to remain alive. But here, one more joker in the deck. She doesn't know if her 6 months are running or not. In the story published at Raw Story, she said, "I've been trying to call them to find out when that 6 months started, but I haven't been able to get a straight answer. They're supposed to be talking about my case this week, so hopefully I'll find out more." So she doesn't even know she's back on the list. She doesn't even know when the 6 months runs. All she knows is that she's sick and she needs a kidney. Meanwhile, some advocates are saying that there's politics in this. Lawmakers in Washington State, Raw Story reports, have listed chronic kidney failure as a medical condition for which marijuana may be recommended due to the nausea caused by dialysis treatments. But the use of cannabis, even in a medical circumstance, is in California frequently listed as substance abuse. Substance abuse. When all in the world you're trying to do is be able to keep your dinner down and fall asleep at night. Oh yeah, I got a feeling it's going to be a busy evening. Because that is just the tip of the iceberg. There's plenty more where that came from. But for right now, we will, if my computer will only cooperate, we will take a little break and come back with your calls. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, available on a wide variety of listening internet platforms, including Stitcher Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes Radio, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com itself, and WhiteRoseSociety.org. All kinds of different ways of going about getting the horn. And you are most assuredly invited to join in the conversation. The phone number, of course, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. An email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And we have the addition now of Skype. If you want to call, but you'd rather use that and you've got a decent little microphone, it's better that you not yell at your computer. The audio can be dodgy. But you can Skype into the program. The handle you look for on Skype is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Very few excuses are left for not becoming part of the program. Coming up, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I hope you'll join in. I'm Bob. Good call, Sandra.
To the largest wildfire in state history, now burning in New Mexico. In Colorado, one resident is now confirmed dead from the out-of-control High Park wildfire that broke out over the weekend 40 miles west of Fort Collins, Colorado. It's now over 41,000 acres and 0% contained. A record warm winter and spring means the forests tinder dry, according to fire management officials.
So even though that fuel looks green, normally wouldn't burn this time of year, is burning very well. And that's why we're getting this aggressive and active fire behavior that we are.
State officials across the West are calling for more federal support in fighting these raging wildfires, even as congressional Republicans are proposing cuts to the Forest Service's firefighting budget. While GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney campaigned last week against hiring firefighters.
He wants to hire more government workers. He says we need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? The American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government and help the American people.
So state officials in Colorado are begging for more federal firefighters going on here, and Mitt Romney is out on the trail saying, we need fewer firefighters.
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
That is exactly. It's amazing.
That is today's Republican Party. They do seem to be hell-bent on cutting as much government as possible, no matter who it hurts.
You know, we have been doing this Green News Report now for some 3 years. It gets worse and worse each and every year. We see these fire seasons like this, and now you've got Republicans actually calling for cuts to the one thing that can combat the problem that they are unwilling to do anything about. This is just, it's amazing, Des.
And the long-term projections for wildfires are not encouraging. Two new studies out this week indicate that, first, rising temperatures and shifting precipitation patterns will likely cause a marked increase in the frequency of wildfires in the U.S. and Europe over the next 30 years. And the second study of regional temperature trends in the U.S. shows that the already dry and hot Southwest is the fastest warming region in the U.S., warming faster than the rest of the country. The record warm winter and spring this year means that NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, announced this week it was indeed the warmest spring in U.S. history. And the last 12 months have been the hottest 12-month stretch on record in the U.S. And 2012 is already shaping up to be the warmest year on record for the entire planet.
We're number one.
In an interview with the Weather Channel, climate scientist Michael Mann, author of the famous hockey stick temperature graph, says that without action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, this trend shows no sign of stopping.
Hey, wasn't Michael Mann the scientist who was caught in the ClimateGate scandal faking climate data?
He was caught up in that ClimateGate scandal, but he faked nothing, so says five independent science panels.
Well, independent is just another word for left-wing, at least if you're in Virginia.
Yes. So apparently, Virginia Republicans are going to rewrite the words of science, following on the heels of North Carolina's Republican state legislature last week attempting to ban the use of science in predicting sea level rise. Virginia's state Republicans are going a step further, deleting the very words sea level rise from planning documents for future coastal development. They call them liberal code words. Sea levels are currently predicted to rise 3 feet by the end of this century, but in Virginia, that will be called recurrent flooding.
So you have a right-wing legislator actually on record saying that sea level rise is a left-wing code word?
A liberal code word.
A liberal code word. Here's another liberal code word. Dude, you're crazy. For more on the crazy that we covered today and all the crazy we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can download our reports anytime via iTunes. You can listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio. And you can follow us 24-7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your liberally covered Green News Report.
I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven past the hour as we begin hour number two of this Tuesday night, the 12th of June program. Two for Tuesday, two more ends for the price, 2 days or more ends for the price of one, whatever. A reminder, sadly, fundraising never ends here at the Horn. We try to raise about $100 a night, and that's just to hold even. We spent the first week of June catching up with May. Now we're trying to catch up with June. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sorry about the problem some of you are having getting the program. I trust it's back by now. Someone's telling me it is. We never even buffered up here, so it may have been a problem with whatever platform you were listening on. Email rolling in from Andy in California under the subject line, Ms. Trujillo and the kidney transplant. Just heartbreaking, the Trujillo marijuana saga. Another reason to love and show great deference for the top 1%. Steve Jobs and Dick Cheney. The John Edwards two-tier society once again playing itself out in real time. One set of rules for the 1%, another for the 99%. Oh, if you have the cash or the power, you go to the head of the line. Again, it boggles the mind. Marijuana is proven to relieve pain, anguish, and inflammation for many suffering citizens. Peer-reviewed studies without the harmful side effects brought to you by the boys and girls at Big Pharma. Not to mention it's actually deemed legal for medical purposes in California. The states' rights issue that Mr. Obama can't get himself to recognize. It's election season, you know, says Andy. Thank you, Andy. And he reminds me of something. As I was standing waiting to go through security in the Frankfurt Airport on the way home a couple of weeks ago. Wow, wasn't even a couple of weeks ago. Amazing. I saw the International Herald Trib on a newsstand there in the front of the airport. And the headline of that paper, and I stood there and read it because I had been illiterate for over a week, you know, not being able to read German. And this was in English, and I was happy to be reading. I'm a reader, you know. But the above-the-fold headline story was about organ sales creeping into Europe. The International Herald Trib reporting that what had been previously thought to be a province, in more ways than one, of India and Asia, i.e. the sale of kidneys, had found its way to Europe, and in particular, the more suffering quadrants of Europe, Greece, Spain, Eastern Europe, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania. I can't recall the Eastern European origin of the particular fellow who was cited, but he'd lost his job some many months back. There were no benefits, no social safety net. There's still enjoying the right-wing economic miracle in that particular Eastern European country. Ukraine, maybe, I don't know. And down to eating only a scarce amount of food every day for him and his family,
the head of the household, the man, had recently reached out to some shady characters to put a kidney up for sale. I know it gets tiresome, but I kind of got to point it out again. They want it all. They want it all. And they're not even paying top dollar for kidneys. No. You would think it would be a seller's market, but no. Selling one kidney, it turns out, wouldn't even keep this man's family alive for a year. It would cripple him for trying to find any work, if any work was there to be had. But yeah, it's made its way to Europe. It's made its way to Europe because austerity has made its way to Europe. Austerity made its way to Europe because the 1% wanted austerity in Europe. Because they are a funder of mountaintop removal, I was reading about the annual general meeting of the Royal Bank of Scotland last night. Lo and behold, apparently, at the meeting of the annual general meeting of the Royal Bank of Scotland on May the 30th of this year, Sir Upper Class Twit of the Year, whatever, that runs that scheme, told shareholders, he said, "I do not expect to see share value returned within my lifetime or many of yours." And again, just like that median household income, where'd all them share values go? People like Andy are certainly sharp on, and Sandra are sharp on issues related to finance and the economy. Where'd that share value go? Because the law of conservation of mass and energy says that matter is neither created nor destroyed, nor is energy. That means when somebody lost, somebody won. There's a lot richer people out there as a result of this plundering. Wow. More than we probably acknowledge exists. Right? Not in our lifetimes. That was the phrase. Hey, welcome to the program. Or not. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, this does get frustrating. I need a producer. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, yeah. I live in Rush Holt's district. I'm going to call him tomorrow. But if you could put together a little thing, I'll send you an email. Name's Joe. About mountaintop removal's effect on children, because I'm getting Chris Smith as my congressman, because of redistrict us.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He seems like a decent guy, but he's just wrong. And he's very, you know, very Catholic. So if you can give him stuff that convinces him that, about the unborn, it might sway him, but I doubt it.
Well, the easiest thing to do, Joe, is to go to crmw.net.
Crmw.net?
Yeah, that's Cold River Mountain Watch's website.
Okay.
And having once gone there, what you'll see, I'll walk through this real quick, crmw.net,
mm-hmm.
And it's rather prominently displayed on the main page.
Testimony on health impacts of mountaintop removal?
No. Oh, dadgummit. I guess we must be in the middle of a redo here. Well... Resources. Health. Okay. So there's a drop down tab at the top. Okay.
Right.
There's one that says resources.
Okay.
At the bottom of that list is something that says health impacts.
Uh huh.
And what you'll find there is a list of every one of the studies, complete with a synopsis. And the very first one is about mountaintop removal and birth defects. And if you'll just send that link to the congressperson in question, they will have all of the data right in front of them.
No, I'll take a look at it. I'll see if maybe I'll print it out and stop by his office.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll hand him some, because I think his office is in the town I live in. You know, they have their districts in the state go all over the place.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, Rush Holt is your congressman right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great one.
Yeah. No, I was surprised when you said that he wasn't...
Well, I mean, he's aware of it, and I think he approves of it, but we need him to be an original co-sponsor of it.
It just surprised me, because I figured he would be involved in that.
Yeah, and what's really important is that his constituents tell him that he need to be...
Yeah,
because, you know, we hillbillies can beat on the door all we want to, but we can't vote for him. It's the it's the voters. That's what matters.
Yes, okay. All right, so... I'll let you talk to people who have actual entertaining things to say.
No, it's not. This is no less entertaining than anything else. This is citizen activism, and it serves as an inspiration to a lot of other people, Joe. So don't sell yourself short, brother.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Uh huh. Take care. Bye now. Joe calling from New Jersey. And that's for anybody. Coal River Mountain Watch. There's also a link there to stoptheache.org. And at Stop the Ache, you can find the bill. You can find all manner of the studies. You can find the summaries. Either way, it's all easy. And like I noted before, this is a great way to be politically active. And know that you are making a real difference in someone's life. So I had a phone full of blinking lights. They are now all gone. If you want to get involved with the program, this would be a good time to do it early in the program, 18 minutes past the hour, the second hour of the program, here this evening. Otherwise, there are, two stories. And yes, this is, well, there's a couple here. First off, let us go to Representative, because I think there's some value in seeing just exactly how sleazy these people are, how soulless, how utterly absent of morality, of ethics, of anything resembling common human decency. I think there's value in this. Now, on the other hand, I had an email from our buddy Reverbo the other day. You know, he's down behind the possum line, behind the cornbread curtain, doing deep cover work. And he sent me a posting from, I believe, the New York Times. Yeah. And it's from the New York Times Magazine. The title, and I understand why it's titled the way it is, but it's still troubling. It is by Steve Almond, and the title of the piece is Liberals Are Ruining America, I Know Because I Am One. And he makes some trenchant points about the fact that we do ourselves no favors, for instance, when progressives and liberals go on Radio Rwanda. But then he goes on and says, this is the tragic flaw of the modern liberal. We choose to see ourselves as innocent victims of an escalating right-wing fanaticism. But too often we serve as willing accomplices to this escalation and to the resulting degradation of our civic discourse. We do this without even meaning to, by consuming conservative folly as mass entertainment. Now, I've said it before, and I will say it again. I'm not trying to be entertaining here. If it's interesting, good. Because we have to have our interest held. but this is this program is not a substitution for a juggler or a sword swallower or a lion tamer or a dancing contest or a basketball game. More on that later. This is what I, this is, I hope, an examination of the facts and of reality. In pointing out this story to me, Reverbo said under the subject line, well put, but how to do it. Good writer and well said, but where's our outlet? The internet? Mainstream media ignores us. And also, where exactly are the reasonable voices on the other side with whom to redirect the country toward a fair and responsible future? The right claims there are tons of reasonable Republicans out there. I don't see or hear them. For that matter, a good third of our side are lost to the money. Our side. Seems like the first thing to do is take over our own party. Hear, hear. Reverbo continues, I agree the progressive, reasonable voices have been for the most part reactive, but I'm not sure we can win this war by just ignoring the enemy. It sounds good, but we've lost the mics, the cameras, and the stage. The president is the only one who still has any of those. My response to Reverbo was, yeah, he does have that, and he uses it so seldom it has dust on it, or they have dust on them. Steve Allman says, that we are somehow the problem because we take note of the worst of the worst. He says, not all right-wing pundits spew hate, but the ones who do are the ones we liberals dependably aggrandize. Well, tell me the right-wing pundits who don't spew hate. Pat Buchanan? George Will? You know, just because George Will mumbles in a sort of teeth-clenching way and wears bow ties and talks about baseball a lot, doesn't mean that he's not full of hate. The right-wing agenda itself is toxic with hate. Even if you weren't a hate-filled right-winger, the minute you start talking about the agenda, you're talking about hate. Because that is what it consists of. So I fear that Mr. Allman's analysis is somewhat suspect. Because when somebody does something as sleazy as, say, a Louis Gohmert in the clip you are about to hear, well, it don't get no more Republican than Louis Gohmert. Of Texas, of course. I told you yesterday about the fact that Karl Rove's little organization had a real ha-ha fest over alleging that Commerce Secretary Bryson was drunk when he had his car wrecked. And they apologized. Well, there will be no apology coming from Louis Gohmert. And, of course, where the sleazy stuff is put out for public consumption is always a subject of discussion as well. Where did Louis Gohmert go to spread this latest little patina of filth? Innuendo? Why, naturally, he went to a network run by the followers of the religion of peace and love. He went on the program hosted by, yeah, you guessed it, a moron from yesterday, Tony Norman Perkins.
Yes, Mother Bates.